Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. Thank you for joining us today on this very dreary Tuesday. We will be talking about a slightly dreary topic as well, which will come later. But to preface, we will be talking about lobotomies.
Light work.
A little light topic. Yeah, exactly. No big deal. It's kind of funny because it relates to our last topics about Riot Girl in a way, as very opposite ends of the spectrum, like lobotomized women versus Riot Girls are like
kind of combining slightly.
Yeah, they're exact opposites.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think we're just gonna hop right into the music with Star Power by Shower Curtain.
Hope you enjoy.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you are tuning in to Slumber Party. My name is DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Kogo. Sorry, didn't respond, but...
We are back, and we are here to talk. But first, I will tell you about those songs. Do not worry. The song that you just heard was Que Fabe by Fivel is Glaque, and the album name is Wrong Weakness. I'm not sure where they're from, but definitely does not sound like English. But that was a bit of experimental jazz. And then before that was Greedy by Love Child.
Pretty good.
Now it's time to get into it. The lobotomy.
The big topic. This was DJ Star's idea. Not sure where this came from.
I hear this a lot on social media, just talking about lobotomies. You're like, oh, if I was existing in the 50s, I would get lobotomized. And I kind of had some sort of sense of what it was, but I wanted to like dig in to the history, exactly what happened, what were the social factors, what were the economic factors that led to this, and exactly what was it I was curious about. So maybe you out there listening want to know about lobotomies, and that's why we're here today.
Oh yeah, I had some fun researching this. It was pretty interesting, a lot of history, especially with women and a lot of lobotomies. But first, we'll just get into the general kind of definition if you don't know what a lobotomy is. So,
okay, yeah. So the first invention of the lobotomy was a frontal lobotomy, which it sounds pretty gruesome, but it is drilling holes into each side of someone's skull and then cutting through their brain tissue, like specifically the frontal lobe, which is very largely responsible for personality. And then severing neural connections between the frontal lobe and the thalamus.
It sounds so disgusting. Yep. I was researching and I was eating something and I decided to watch a video of someone getting a lobotomy.
No.
Safe to say, did not finish my meal after that. But they did these mostly for patients suffering from mental illness. So these were severe cases of disorders like schizophrenia, people suffering from mania.
Or severe depression.
Depression, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this, I think the initial idea came about in around the 1800s, but then it started becoming more popularized in the 30s and 40s. When there was also the transorbital lobotomy, which was like a more developed idea of the lobotomy.
This one's even grosser.
Yeah, so this kind of brings you back to like Egyptian kind of things where it's like inserting, I guess they go through the nose, but this one is inserting a surgical instrument called a leucotome. And it looks like, I looked up a photo, it kind of looks like a pair of scissors and also like an ice pick. And they go through the eye socket to access the brain. Easy access.
How does the eye not get damaged in
any
way?
So many questions, yeah.
Yeah. I looked this up a little bit and they call this like informally the ice pick lobotomy because of what it does. And it was popularized by this one guy. His name is Walter Freeman. And so he conducted the actual first lobotomy in 1936. And he did these ice pick lobotomies all across the USA. So he essentially went on kind of a tour. And it was like a some weird psychiatric tour where he went to a bunch of these, he went to 55 psychiatric hospitals.
It's like a circus.
Yeah, it's like a little circus for his patients. Mm-hmm. And he performed these surgeries and then also taught the ice pick method to other surgeons.
Spreading the word.
Yeah, but it was interesting because he noted that he no longer needed a drill or other patients or even scrubs to wear while doing these surgeries.
It's too easy. It seems
a little unsafe, but
And also I said the frontal lobe before was associated with personality, but it's also associated with behavior, emotion, and problem solving skills. And people, like, they're just going in there cutting out parts of the frontal lobe, just like, okay, we're gonna sever this connection. And they did it to reduce abnormal stimuli that could cause impulsive or violent behavior. But yeah, definitely had some different side effects than just that.
Yeah. So, yeah, they ended up doing those things to sever the connections. And so some of the symptoms, we can get into that, is that definitely the patients, they had a lot of their responsiveness, self-awareness, spontaneity reduced, but mostly they were really emotionally dulled, and their intellect was restricted after these lobotomies.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading just some quotes from surgeons that had performed lobotomies in the 40s-ish, and they were reporting patients being more comfortable, and I was kind of like, who are they more, like, are the patients more comfortable? Are they more comfortable for others around them? But they're like, oh, yeah, but they lose some of their sparkle. Like, verbatim, some of their sparkle.
Jeez.
So that's, you know, nobody wants to lose their sparkle.
Yeah.
They said, like, it was also supposed to alleviate their symptoms of insomnia, nervous tension, apprehension, anxiety, which seems like these types of symptoms, especially apprehension, like, is that even a symptom?
Yeah, no.
Like, you're just kind of, you know, not sure about something, and we're going in. Yeah, we're going in with an ice pick, cutting out parts of the brain. That, it just does not line up to me.
Yeah.
At all, how invasive the surgery is for how, like, potentially minor some of the symptoms are for patients.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they had the right idea of not like, I know that the symptoms are bad,
guys,
and that
guys,
the lobotomies
were not that bad.
Guys, because I guess, like, seeing how they can incorporate biology into fixing a psychological problem could be the right steps to wanting to try to fix mental illness, like, in a way. Like, I feel like their intentions were good to try to solve mental illness, even though it turned out pretty drastic and dulling all the emotions of the patient. I guess they definitely didn't mean to, but it is pretty crazy that we went through this time period of medicine history, and it's actually quoted as one of the greatest mistakes of medicine history.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think people back then also totally misunderstood mental health, because they're taking it so literally, like, oh, there's something going wrong in the brain. Like, let's just get in there physically and take this issue out. We know that's not the right way to do it now.
Yeah, this was definitely at a time period, the lobotomies, when they had a lot of psychiatric asylums. And so this was at the point before psychiatric drugs, before therapy, we knew about all of this. And so they would just basically take anyone who got referred and had maybe a crazy incident or something, and they just throw them into an asylum where it was now overcrowded, understaffed, underfunded. So then when they found that, maybe we can do a quick fix and get them out the asylums with this surgery, it got pretty popularized.
Mm.
But then, after specifically the 1950s was when the first antipsychotic drug was created, called chlorpromazine. And this was used for treating schizophrenia. This was kind of the downfall of lobotomies, which is good. It's a great thing that we had a downfall for it, because it wasn't really too helpful. But yeah, it was at a time where we started understanding how the conditions were in these asylums, the actual effects of lobotomies, and then just trying to get all these psychiatric patients back into the community and away from these horrid conditions. So that's a little bit about the time period, though.
And
so,
something to quickly note that I just think is a staggering fact, and I did not know this before, but the original developer of the lobotomy, who did a lot of work pioneering the surgery, his name was Antonio Egas Moniz. He actually won the Nobel Prize for that work. Not like a different type of work, but he won it for lobotomies, like his work in lobotomies.
Wow.
And that is just insane to me that it was recognized at such a high level when it was also regarded as one of the greatest mistakes ever.
Yeah, looking back now, it does seem crazy. But at the time, I feel like to create an operation on that scale to that essentially fix mental illness could have seemed pretty monumental at the time.
But the thing is, a lot of the symptoms, especially for women, weren't even super consistent with mental illness.
Right.
And I think this connects to a long history of women being seen as more predisposed to behavioral or mental issues. And we can get into that. But I think a lot of the symptoms were not, like I said, apprehension, anxiety, like that. I mean, some of it can be mental illness, but I also feel like a lot of it was just male doctors wanting to kind of control a woman's sparkle.
Yeah, there's a whole tie with mental illness as a whole with women. We touched in a bit for our research about hysteria.
Yeah, so this hysteria has been like around, this idea of hysteria has been around for so long, like over 3,000 years ago in a bunch of different cultures.
Oh yeah, there's been like ancient Egyptians and the philosopher Hippocrates, they said they identified hysterical cause in spontaneous uterus movement in the female body. I'm like, how do you measure spontaneous uterus movement?
But they don't. It's yeah, you it can. Sounds completely made up.
So that seems ridiculous, first of all. But
yeah, it was the first mental disorder like associated with women, I think. And hysteria literally means uterus. It comes from the Greek word hysteria, which means uterus.
Jeez, yeah.
So okay. Like, you got a problem, you have a uterus. Let's just call it that, okay?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Oh, and as well, Sigmund Freud, one of the most well-known psychologists, he also considered hysteria an almost exclusively female disease, and that's someone who a lot of people followed his research. So definitely has a lot of ties with mental illness as well.
Yeah, because that has been building and building over thousands of years. It also became really popular in the 18th century with women just being diagnosed with hysteria left and right. And a lot of those things were like, I don't know, not really wanting to do anything intimate with their husband, or like getting angry, having symptoms of PTSD.
Yeah.
Like those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's like if you're in the 20th century and your wife starts having an emotional breakdown or something, like, and since women basically had no rights at that time, the husband or her father or her brother could basically just go talk to the doctor about the signs of mental illness and hysteria, and then take her in for a lobotomy, and then now she's compliant and passive.
So that's the goal. Because also something that's crazy when I was reading about hysteria is that there was an actual case where one of the woman's symptoms was a fondness of writing.
I laughed when I saw
like,
this.
Oh my god, she has hobbies, like she's hysterical. This is insane. Yeah, so
yeah, and as well to tie this in with the lobotomies, there's this one stat that I thought was pretty interesting, is that women were lobotomized more than men. There was survey from 1949 to 1951 that tracked the amount of procedures, and it found that 60% of lobotomized patients were women. And even though men outnumber women in almost all psychiatric institutions, so there's definitely something a little fishy going on that can't just be tracked equally.
For sure. Like, male doctors were recorded saying that men are rarely hysterical. And for the cure for hysteria, it was pretty much bed rest with no physical or mental activity whatsoever. So it's like, just stay there and get really bored. It will fix you. Don't worry.
But then we'll just lobotomize the woman.
And one other crazy fact that I just wanted to say, and it kind of ties into lobotomies, I'm still talking about hysteria, but a Canadian psychiatrist, his name is Richard Maurice Buck. So he was active in the 19th century. He was actually a big advocate for removing the uterus completely to cure female patients of mental illness, which kind of can tie into lobotomies because they are removing parts of the brain of majority female patients to cure them of mental illness. But I think it's just taking away their humanity.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, for that psychiatrist, there was a lot of controversy. I think he was like thrown out of whatever medical association he was a part of. But, you know, there is still that kind of rhetoric and ideology that preluded lobotomies, which is scary to think about. For sure.
I think they probably would have gave me a lobotomy if I was born a little earlier. But
I think a lot of women nowadays, like the point that we're at, where you know, it's okay to have an opinion.
Yeah.
That is pretty much like, okay.
Yeah, because even we have the, it's called the hysterical woman trope that's still played in media. You still
for
hear.
For sure, yeah. I mean, we're talking about this like it was in the past, but this these things carry over too.
Yeah, because people say,